AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. The grain markets are caught up in a wave of buying again this morning. That's driven by, for one thing, the highest inflation rate in 40 years, and by one of the biggest one-time cuts to the Brazilian bean crop estimate the market has ever had to digest. We'll talk farm economic outlook and learn about another new oilseed crush plant.
Live from a majestic, inspiring bull run via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Tom Kersting, CEO of the South Dakota Soybean Processors. Then it's Jackson Takish from Farmer Mac. Later, Ron Hovsepian, CEO of Indigo Ag. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers, I'm Handsome Newsman, Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Dude, you know how we talk about how the news cycle just keeps running and running and running and running, and all we're really doing is trying to keep up?
It just doesn't stop, Chip.
I'm not sure that we can keep up with what is going on in ag right now.
I've got something we can do. I usually save this sort of malarkey for the afternoon show, but I just got to send a shout out to $16 beans, baby. Huh?
There it goes. It's unbelievable. And this afternoon, let's go ahead and talk about this a little bit. This afternoon's guest, Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities out of Cedar Rapids, sent me some wonderful charts this morning.
Oh, great.
It shows that new crop soybeans have never been higher in the month of February than they are right now. Corn, new crop corn futures, the second highest they've ever been in the month of February. You want to talk about a dynamic market, mm-hmm. and one that is chock full of opportunities. Man, oh, man, that's it right there. So new oilseed crush plant. I'm stressing oilseed. It's not just a soybean crush plant.
Okay.
They're planning for the future and some different crops up in South Dakota. We're going to talk with Tom about that. Mm-hmm. Really looking forward to the conversation with Jackson about this 7.5% inflation rate, the highest in 40 years. And then Ron Hovsepian from Indigo Ag with some big news that was just announced this morning. So, wow. A lot of ground to cover. Let's get to it.
Well, Chip, CONAB slashed its official Brazilian soybean crop estimate by 15 million metric tons from last month to 125.5 million metric tons due to drought in the entire southern region and part of Mato Grosso do Sul. The government forecasting agency slashed its 21-22 soybean export forecast by 9.1 million metric tons. CONAB also cut its Brazilian corn crop estimate by 559,000 metric tons from last month. It now forecasts 21-22 Brazilian corn exports at 35 million metric tons. That's down 1.7 million metric tons from last month. But, Chip, that soybean crop estimate, that's the big story here.
Well, it's the bean crop estimate and that cut to the export estimate. Yep. That's like 325 million bushels, Davis, mm-hmm. off the export estimate. It's shocking. I haven't done the math on the 15 million ton cut, but that's like 750 million bushels that they took off of the bean crop.
Pretty big deal. Mm-hmm.
This is historic stuff that we're talking about when it comes to these new estimates from CONAB.
Well, U.S. inflation accelerated to a 7.5% annual rate in January, rising to a new four-decade high, according to the Labor Department. The January number includes a once-per-year revision that affects seasonally adjusted data for the past 5 years. The Labor Department also updated the list of goods included in the calculation, known as a spending basket, to reflect consumer habits in 2019 and 2020. Average U.S. household spending has increased $250 per month amid the rise in consumer prices, brother.
Well, and we've got that big football game that's coming up this weekend, and the business channels are doing the here's what your Super Bowl party is going to cost you compared to last year. And one of the things that they're focused on is chicken wings. And mm-hmm. you know, it's like an 18% increase year on year. They've had some of the restaurant owners on there saying, listen, if we put in the increased cost for the chicken wings, the increased cost for the labor, the increased cost for this, the increased cost for that, we would have to quadruple the cost of chicken wings to cover all of their expenses from a year ago. Quadruple.
Wow.
You can't. That's unsustainable.
Chicken wings are good, though.
Yeah,
the United States will hold China to account for failing to meet the purchase of commitments pledged under the Phase 1 trade deal. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said, quote, we intend to hold them to account. Representative Tai is in the thick of those negotiations now, she said, adding that Beijing, quote, is not playing by the rules as the government subsidizes companies, limiting American businesses' ability to compete. This is interesting. China suspended beef imports from Lithuania without giving a reason, though there is a growing trade spat between those two countries centered on Chinese-claimed Taiwan. And here's the deal. Lithuania allowed Taiwan to open a de facto embassy in its capital last year, upsetting Beijing.
That would be the reason that there will be no Lithuanian roast beef sandwiches in China.
You can't find them. You can't find them.
Nope.
Initial efforts by the Biden administration on installing charging stations for electric vehicles will be unveiled today. Also, according to the Associated Press, some Democratic senators yesterday called for suspending the federal gas tax. And this one I got to get in here. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi expects Democrats to soon reach consensus on restricting stock trading by members of Congress amid debate over the scope of legislation, including whether to extend a ban to lawmakers' spouses. Chip.
Okay. Yeah. If they take away that federal gas tax, 18.4 cents per gallon.
Yeah.
Do that through 2023. Yeah. 18.4 cents per gallon is a lot, but there's a better way to fix this problem. Let's go ahead and just make more.
You can't do that.
I'm just saying. Thanks, Davis. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chip.
Hey, the cash cattle showing some signs of strength again this week. What's up?
Yeah, the beef complex is giving us some good news. Prices were higher last week, and they've added at least a dollar this week. And we have reports of some sellers, Chip, turning down 141 this week. They think the market's going higher. And the signals are that yesterday's futures prices reached a contract high, and the nearby futures prices ended at a six-year high. So futures are modestly up again this morning. Best news, Chip, is that slaughter levels are moving higher after January harvest was disappointing. Last month, slaughter was down about 3.1% from 2021 and down almost 9% from 2020. So there were some issues going on there, you know, with the Omicron COVID thing. So
what you said is counterintuitive. Let's hit on that for just 10 seconds. With slaughter numbers going back up, it means that the market-ready cattle that are sitting in the feedlot that were not able to be processed because of labor issues are now going through the system.
Absolutely. We're seeing those numbers decline. And while all of that's positive, Chip, analysts are warning us that the market is ignoring the fact there is a record number of cattle on feed, and that too many people are focusing on the current 6 weeks from now. And there is heavy numbers coming this summer. Prices are going to be under pressure again.
All right. Well, you know, there's quite an opportunity in that market right now to put a price floor underneath it. We had a great conversation with Brad Hewlett from Consolidated Beef Producers yesterday afternoon on the show about doing stuff like that. So good stuff, Greg. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, that is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Coming up next, we're going to learn about a new oilseed crushing facility, Mitchell, South Dakota, next, AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
find farm equipment on Machine Repeat's February 22nd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could be with us this morning. I'm your host, Chip. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello,
Davis, I am going to be down in Nashville next week.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, at the Top Producer Summit. And one of the big reasons that I'm going down is to moderate a panel that is that is titled, How Will a Surge in Bio-Based Fuels Impact Grain Demand? So I'm the moderator. Mm-hmm. We've got Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company. We've got Steve Nicholson from Robo Agri-Finance. And we've got Pete Meyer from S&P Global Platts on this panel.
Yeah, the all-stars of intellect.
I'm very impressed by the guys that are on the panel. I'm just going to be trying to keep up with the conversation. But this
just nod your head a lot.
That's right. That's right. And bring the questions in from the audience. That will be my job.
There you go. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
But we have been talking about the impacts and how it has been generating, incentivized the expansion of the crush industry. And we've got another new crush plant to talk about. And here to do that with us is Tom Kersting. He's the CEO of South Dakota Soybean Processors. Tom, welcome to AgriTalk. Hey, man, thank you so much for making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Tom, at the start of the show, before we talk about the plant, tell us about South Dakota Soybean Processors.
We're a producer-owned company. We've been around for about 25 years now. We operate two soybean plants in South Dakota, one here at Valga, where I'm at, and another one out west by Miller, South Dakota.
Right. And capacity on that plant out at Miller, or about capacity that you've got for crushing right now, what is that?
Yeah, the one here at Valga does around 28, 29 million bushels annually. The plant out at Miller is kind of a specialty plant.
Yeah.
We do a lot of specialty soybeans out there, non-GMO, things like that. That's a much smaller plant. That's at that 5 to 6 million annually.
Okay, 5 to 6 million. So that Miller plant probably is not going to be, since it's a specialty crush plant, it's probably not going to be participating in the providing feedstock for the renewable diesel market much, is it?
No, not at all. No. It's non-GMO, and we've also been exploring organic and things like that out there.
Gotcha. Okay, so Tom, this new plant, like I was going to say at the start of the show, I emphasized and didn't want to call it a soybean crush plant, although it can crush soybeans. I called it an oilseed crush plant because you're planning for the future with this one, aren't you? It's a multi-seed crush facility.
It is. You know, when we started looking at this quite a while ago, you know, we said to ourselves, if this thing is all about oil, let's do something that's all about oil. And, you know, so soybeans, you know, 18-19% oil. You look at, you know, sunflowers and some of these other crops, you know, they're 38-40%+ oil content. So as the market demands more and more oil for both renewable diesel and food's not going to go away. It just makes sense to look at some of these higher oil content seeds and have that flexibility, that capability to do that.
Yeah. Tom, if you don't have these numbers, just say so, and I'll get them someplace else. But on an acre, on a per acre basis, how does that soybean oil content on a per acre basis compare to sunflowers?
Well, if you look at, you know, the acres we're targeting out west, you know, what they can do for soybeans and what they can do for sunflower yields, you're going to get about twice as much oil per acre on sunflowers. And, you know, that's what's going to drive the profitability, and that's what we're going to see growth in sunflower acres in South Dakota coming from.
I got to believe that, Tom, because we're going to have to be doing things to get more. And it's one of the things that we've always talked about with biodiesel is one of the holdups as it affects soybeans. Is you're just not getting – there are other crops that can provide more oil per acre than what soybeans can, and we're going to need to take a look at some of those. And And there's other crops that fit that category as well. I'm thinking about canola. I believe canola's in that category, isn't it?
It is, exactly. And we're looking at some of those things. They're a little farther down the line. You know, there's some fall-seeded canola that might be able to be grown in this region. And we're also looking at, you know, camelina, things like this as well.
Okay. Yeah, all very excited. Why Mitchell? Why Mitchell for the location?
Two reasons. Actually, there's a multiple reasons we're looking at that location. First of all, we like it's on the main line, BNSF Railroad down there.
Awesome.
There's a good production base of soybeans. And we're also seeing a tremendous growth in, hog and dairy production in that area as well, which will help on the soybean meal and the sunflower meal offtake. And then finally, just because of its proximity to I-90 and how we can get to those western acres where the sunflowers will be grown.
Yep.
It's a good tributary to getting out there and getting a hold of those acres and then bringing them to Mitchell. So,
yep. That Mitchell is a pretty cool town. They've got to be excited about this.
They are. You know, they've been very supportive from day one. We've got a good producer base down there that are members of ours, and they're tremendously excited.
Yeah. How many new jobs might this be? I mean, a crush facility. And I haven't asked you the capacity on this plant or the planned capacity on this plant. What is it?
Yeah, it's a little smaller than some of the ones that are being announced. You're seeing a lot of 40, 50 million type annual soybean type volumes. This one, 35 is where we're planned. For a soybean plant, that's a little small. For a sunflower plant, that's very large.
Right.
So it kind of fits in our business model. We usually run a little less volume up here at Volga. So we're comfortable with that and, the kind of operational expenses that go along with it. So it'll probably be 50 plus jobs, something like that.
Okay. All right. Very cool. How difficult is it to make the move from crushing soybeans over to sunflowers and probably back again?
Yeah, that's a challenge. And it adds a lot of capital cost to the project, moving back and forth. We've got some experience with that, going back and forth with GM and non-GM products out of Miller. It takes a lot of management, takes extra bin space. From the refining side, there's more tankage involved. It all comes down to management and working with your growers on deliveries and also with your customers on how you get that product out in time and manner.
Okay. Has anybody stepped up to lay claim to the soybean oil coming out of the plant yet? A lot of the plants are being constructed with in partnership with a refiner.
Yeah, not yet. We've made, I've had some initial conversations, but wasn't quite ready to go out with this announcement. I wanted to have a few more things buttoned up, but we're far enough along where I felt comfortable that I think the hurdles that we've got to get across are achievable. But we hope to get out to the marketplace and have some serious talks here shortly.
Okay, so are we looking at crushing 24 crop beans with this plant or 25 crop?
Well, with the supply chain issues being what they are as far as equipment deliveries and everything else, it's so hard to pinpoint when you're going to start out. But our goal is, fall of 24, spring of 25. I know that's a wide range, but it's too hard to tell at this point.
Yeah. It's understandable. The guys that are listening have built bins and stuff like that. They know.
Yeah.
So, obviously, South Dakota soybean processors are excited about the potential of the renewable diesel market, right?
We are. In fact, a few years back when Sinclair, Wyoming came online, it was like a shockwave went through the industry. And then this past year, it's just ramped up as more and more of these plants have come on. And being that we're one of the western most plants, it's really benefited us. We've seen our product mix, our customer mix, we used to be almost exclusively food. and very, a little bit of biodiesel type demand, you know, it was probably 10-15%. Now we're about 50-50 going into renewable diesel.
Wow.
Just with the just with the few plants that are going today. So
Wow. And Tom, very quickly, the reason for the a lot of the expansion is happening in the Western Belt. It's because of the location and the to the renewable diesel refiners, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we're like I said, we're shipping Sinclair, Wyoming. We've been shipping to Dickinson, North Dakota. We're set to ship this month to Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Wow.
And then also a plant in that's just coming online in California. So
outstanding.
It's all Western for us.
Outstanding. Tom, let's stay in touch on this. Good luck with it. And, wow, it's a dynamic time, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate it.
You bet. Tom Kirstening, CEO, South Dakota Soybean Processors. We've got Jackson Takish up next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Wow, Beej, that's really all you can say about these markets. Now, March beans, about 15 cents higher right now and right at mid-range. So we're backing off of the highs, but still have some solid gains.
Yeah, if you just took a snapshot right now, you'd say, oh, yeah, it's an impressive move. And it still is impressive, but well off the highs that we posted earlier today. So we'll have to watch that one into the close. The fund's just aggressively throwing money into the long side of the market, not only in soybeans, but also in corn. And, you know, they're near record long positions now in those markets, and they may be records. We'll have to wait on CFTC data to confirm that. But just really starting to be weighted heavily to one side of the boat. And so, you know, there's always some risks involved in that when that happens, that, you know, a top could come at any point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. We had an export sales announcement again this morning on soybeans. We had the big cut by Konab. That's got to be the biggest driving force behind it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The fundamentals, you know, the shrinking Brazilian crop and Konab absolutely slashed it by 15 million tons. The fact that China and unknown destinations continue to show up on a near daily basis now for both old and new crop U.S. soybeans, both of those are very price supportive.
Right. Okay, take us over to livestock trade. Another big move in hogs.
Yeah, so the hog market, you know, much like soybeans, just it continues to explode higher here, and we continue to see the funds come in and aggressively buy. Some of that is spilling over to the cattle market, but we're also seeing that the cash trade is firming up from levels earlier in the week, so that's also supportive for live cattle.
All right, good stuff, Brian. Thanks, buddy. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. Davis, So I've been trying to compile a complete list of the new crush capacity that is either planned, construction has started, blueprints are finalized, announcements. Mm-hmm. If you throw all of those into one basket, all right,
okay.
And I'm not saying that they're all going to happen, but the expansion and the new plants and everything, we're pushing 550 million bushels of demand that's coming to the market, which just happens to be about the amount of soybeans that Brazil just cut from that Konab cut from the Brazilian bean crop estimate, and look at the kind of price reaction that you get from it.
So adding
500 million bushels of consistent domestic demand to a market, holy smokes, it changes everybody's life. Everybody's. It's crazy. Okay, another guy that's going to be on the stage Tuesday morning at the Top Producer Summit in Nashville is Jackson Takich. He is the chief economist for Farmer Mac, and he joins us right now. Jackson, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well, Chip. Happy to be with you today.
I'm glad that you are. So your presentation, it's going to kick it off on Tuesday morning for us down there. Seeing Through the Fog, How Global Economic Forces Will Impact U.S. Ag in 2022. A couple of things from the title. Why the reference to the fog, Jackson? Are you saying that there isn't much clarity on the economic outlook for the year ahead?
I think that's a fair statement. And fog is something that we've been dealing with in all facets of economic life, from personal life all the way down to central bank expectations for the last 2.5 years. So.
Yeah.
I think we're still seeing a little bit of fog, but I think one of the things I'm going to talk about is what are the things that we can start to see through. We're getting maybe clearer vision to open skies ahead, but we may need some assistance.
Right. We'll get to some of those, but I want to stay on the title, because the other one that I look at and I just think, my goodness, how do you even know which global economic force to start with potential impacts to ag in 2022. There's a long list of items to choose from.
Absolutely. And, for me, it all starts with demand. What are consumers demanding, and how healthy is the economy in our top trading partners, right? So, as much as I never want to say COVID again in my entire life, if I get to a place where I never have to say the word COVID again, I'll be a happy man. But it's still hanging around out there. And we got to talk about, hey, this is going to maybe impact some of the recoveries that we're seeing in those foreign markets. That's going to impact how much animal protein, how many fruits and vegetables, the trade picture. I mean, all of that flows right back down to the farm finances. So, for me, it stops and starts with the consumer. That's where I always start my journey. And maybe the second stop is for sure in input prices and costs.
Right. Let's stay with the consumers. And The whole world's getting a look inside of China again right now at the Winter Olympics, and there's some positive stories coming out of the Olympics. There's some not so positive stories about conditions inside of China. But when we talk about consumers, you got to focus on that country. Just how economically stable are they for the year ahead?
Yeah, I'd say it's not going to be the same sort of recovery that it was experienced in 2021. So most economists are looking at something like a 4-5% GDP, real GDP growth rate. One nice thing I think in China is the prices are fairly stable. So, we don't have the same level of CPI or inflation rates that maybe we do here or some other more developed countries do. So there's some positive signs that the GDP print number that's likely to come out of China this year. But it's certainly a far cry from the 8-10% that we got maybe used to a few years ago and got back to in 2021. Certainly looking at something a little bit less than what you might expect out of an emerging market economy.
All right. Catherine Tai, trade representative, is there right now saying, listen, the trade agreement that was struck with the Trump administration is a real thing. What do you think her odds are of success of getting China refocused on that trade agreement?
Well, that's a tough call, because there's probably a lot of, support to continue doing trade negotiations and, to at least say like, hey, yes, we value this trade relationship. We need the products that you're shipping, and we need you as a trading partner. But I think there's probably good chance of getting some positive talk out of it. But as some of these things are very difficult to enforce. You kind of get a couple of years down the road and you say, hey, we missed it. We tried hard, but you can't make up markets where they don't exist. So COVID happened. That was a difficult thing to predict, nay impossible, going back to say 2018, 2019. Yeah. So, it becomes a very difficult thing to enforce. I expect there to be some good positive outcomes from those negotiations, but maybe not a, hey, we're just going to buy every bushel of corn just because we said we would, because that's not really market-based trade either.
Yep, I get it. That's right. Let's come here to the U.S. Inflation in January, 7.5%. But from the farmer's perspective, 7.5%, in a lot of cases, they would appreciate inflation of just 7.5%, Jackson. You referenced the income prices, or input prices earlier. It's a crazy kind of market for us, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Fortunately, it's isolated to a few categories that are really, they're really driving up those input prices. I mean, anything related to energy right now, it's just expensive relative to where we were. I mean, I think we all got used to gasoline prices during the pandemic. You know, nobody's really driving. Some of that production was stopped, you know, along the oil production and natural gas production. So some of those wells, you know, essentially capped off. And we got kind of used to maybe lower prices because demand was so low. So now, you know, in my area, I'm out in Washington, D.C., I'm looking at, you know, $3.30, $3.40 for a gallon of gasoline, and I'm not very used to that. I know farmers are feeling the same pinch when they're buying diesel or gasoline out there all across the country. So, you know, these are big shocks, in particular as it flows through to fertilizer costs, right? So even if you can get your fertilizer, which some, you know, that could be a challenge too. You know, even the supply to deliver orders already taken is somewhat challenged in certain parts. But let's say you're able to get it, it's expensive. And a lot of that is driven by higher energy prices, global energy prices, natural gas being the primary driver there. And just, you know, some geopolitics that aren't very friendly right now.
Right.
It all kind of bubbled up. I'll have a nice chart in Tuesday's discussion, just looking at what are the points along that fertilizer price run-up that drove and continued to sort of almost just boulder, right? It's the boulder kept rolling and developing more and more pressure. And, you know, with any luck, you see some of those energy prices come back down. $100 oil becomes a pretty good enticement to get production back online. So you see oil start to creep up to 90 bucks. That's when I think you see a lot more supply come into the marketplace and hopefully calm some things. Yeah. Plus we get out of winter in the Northern Hemisphere. I think that's going to help out tremendously, but it's not going to help us out, you know, in June. Right. So you know, we're kind of dealing with these prices right now. And I know it's a pretty serious sticker shock. Maybe one final area I see a lot of discussion on for input prices, just the cost of land. You know, land values really skyrocketed in the Midwest and along the West Coast and South too. This 2021, that drives up price, drives up the, you know, the cost of borrowing. So if, you know, Farmer Mac, we're looking at farm real estate loans every single day, and you know, you're seeing those costs start to creep up just because it costs more to buy an acre of ground than it did 2 years ago, and that's going to sort of snowball into higher rental rates. It doesn't happen right away. But as land values go up, it's going to drive up the rental rates too. So that's another sort of step towards those higher input prices. And I got to say, you know, looking at the futures board, thank goodness for, you know, $6.55 corn and $16 beans, because those are going to be pretty necessary to continue to ink profits at some of these input price levels.
Yeah, no question about it. No question. On the land prices, expectations of higher interest rates, I don't know if I've ever seen a slam dunk on an expectation for interest rates before, but they're going to be higher at the end of this year than what they are right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can almost say that with certainty. Just looking at the probabilities for the Fed raising its sort of policy rate, the Fed funds rate. I mean, right now there's 100%. So the market is betting 100%, all the chips on the table. There's going to be a raise in March. Now, how much is that raise? That was the big news today with the CPI print, the inflation print. How much is that raise going to be? Everyone was kind of saying 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. And now it's 50-50. Is it going to be 25 or 50 basis points? So that's a big switch to the market expectations of just how much those short-term rates are going to rise. And that's going to go directly to the cost of operating expenses. So, I mean, that's linked, you know, probably with about a year lag. So I think a lot of bankers have probably already priced their loans, production loans for the year. But, you know, next year, that's certainly, you know, for every basis point that Fed funds rate goes up, it increases the operating costs for the farmers. Now, the long end may take a little bit longer. You know, right now it's a really flat yield curve. So the long end is not quite rising as fast. So I think there's still some time to do some balance sheet management so farmers can maybe fix their interest rate costs a little bit, restructure, and still take advantage of very low interest, even though, hey, it's up half a point or even a point in some places. That's still a very low interest rate compared to 10 years ago. So there's still a lot of opportunities there.
Yes, yes, absolutely, no doubt. Well, for an economy nerd like me, I am really looking forward to your presentation down there next week, Jackson. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chip. Looking forward to it.
All right. That is Jackson Takich. He is the chief economist for Farmer Mac. All right. When we come back, Indigo is making some moves. Let's hear about it right next, right here, AgriTalk.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4.
Yeah, don't need to do that. No, But if you would like to send us a tweet, just include hashtag AgriTalk in it. Send us an email, host@agritalk.com. But someday, we'll be taking calls again, just not today.
And the music stopped, and can I just say, Justin Timberlake on AgriTalk now, mama. Something for the ladies. Now back to you.
Outstanding. Good work. Good work. All right. Indigo Ag and Landis have teamed up. There was another announcement this morning, and if I've got this right, it's a new grain marketing platform. Let's learn about it right now from Ron Hovsepian. He is the CEO of Indigo Ag. Ron, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good, Chip. How are you doing today?
Doing real well. And you've got another announcement in that collaboration with Landis. What is that?
Yeah, we've had a chance to partner with the folks at Landis and really focus in on where and how we could help the industry continue to evolve. And it's really leveraging a lot of our science and technology in that shared vision to really scale and build out a new way of doing business, taking advantage of this big transformation that's happening across the industry around sustainability.
Okay. A lot of it has to do with data, doesn't it, Ron?
It sure does. As you know, data plays a big role for the farmer, a big role along the rest of the supply chain. And being able to put the data together for the farmer is part of the shared vision that Landis has to bring to life and help advance the farmer centricity up the supply chain to meet with the corporations that want to buy those products from the farmers. They want to get that connectivity while working within the whole supply chain.
Okay. Have you got some of the details of what Market Plus merchandise is?
Yeah, what Market Plus merchandise does is it really sets the foundation for this big set of changes that are coming through the industry in this watershed moment that we're talking about. And what it really does is it helps the co-op, in this case what Landis is doing in their view of where the market's going for the farmer, it helps people understand where and how to share grain and grain transactions in a private manner so that the buyer and the seller can match two things. One, the actual classic grain trade, but two, it also allows them to now start to think about how do I take those sustainability attributes and trade them along the journey so that the buyer and seller can make their best relationship happen between the two of them. And that's part of the excitement of what's happening in this new physical and information supply chain that's occurring that we've got to make work in parallel on behalf of the farmer. And that's really where Landis and us share a very deep vision together on how to really evolve with the industry.
Okay. Check me on this, Ron, but it sounds like we're trying, the goal here is to attach a sustainability value, a carbon value, to that bushel of grain as it makes its way to the processor.
Yep. The answer is complex answer, but the general answer is yes. We want to tie that together on the whole journey. Just do regular commodity trading all the way through to what you just described for carbon or other sustainability attributes. Sometimes it might just be, it could be as deep as a scope 3 emission, but we're starting with carbon as part of our journey. And that's part of what we've done with Landis because they saw the importance of that for the farmer in creating a new revenue stream on behalf of their farmers that they represent. And they were very much at the forefront of that thinking.
Yeah. This is, it's fascinating stuff to see how the carbon value is changing the landscape out there, Ron. Indigo has obviously gotten some traction. I mean, it's beyond traction that Indigo has gotten. But what's the growth look like for 2022 in your carbon program?
Yeah, great question. So first and foremost, the farmers have been very generous with us in accepting the way we designed the program. And I think what's important here is on our journey, we're just like a cash crop for the farmer, except they're planting this one down, right? And we don't get paid until they get paid. These are very important constructs for the farmer that we think is a shared value. And the second thing we did was we made it market-based, which I think is, and I'll come back and finish answering your question. What market-based means to us is that you get the highest value, just like you do for your cash crops.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at it, in order to get the highest value, you actually have to have the highest quality. The standard we put in place, and we're the only one that is registry approved, is at that highest level, right? That's at the highest level in the market. Now, why that's important is what we're seeing for prices right now in the projections, for example, out of a Morgan Stanley study that came out of Europe, is really prices now beginning to run 90, and they're projecting forward to anywhere to $120, $150 per ton of carbon over the next 5 years. That's their numbers. So when you look at that, that's great. To answer your question directly, we're looking to actually double our business with our partners like Landis in order to deliver this, because we can only do a part of it. We've laid out all the science, the super rigorous science, complementing it with the tools of Market Plus. And what we're now able to do is help the farmer and the buyer strike that relationship the right way in order to bring that next generation of capability. And we're really looking to double our business this coming year in terms of the number of acres that farmers enroll. So we're very excited about what we can get done here.
Wow. I tell you, 90 compared to the market that's out there right now on a per ton basis for the carbon, 90 to 120 bucks is going to catch a lot of people's attention, don't you think?
Absolutely. Pre-registry, we were selling them, last batch I sold was over $40 a ton, and that's before the registry approval at this super high standard. I believe when they start to come through that this spring, which is our expectation to be the first ones into the market, that's going to help drive that conversation to a whole nother level, and it'll give birth to these higher numbers. And there's a range anywhere from three different studies, anywhere from, you know, $40, $50 a ton, all the way up to $100 plus.
Okay.
So you got to have somewhere to do that business, though, right?
That's right. Ron, we've got to go. Thank you so much. We'll get another update from you later.
Sounds great, Chip. Thanks for having
me. You bet. That is Ron Hovsepian from Indigo Ag. All right. Come back later this afternoon, 206 Central, Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities, AgriTalk.